This podcast is made possible by the generous contributions from listeners just like you. If you have the means and you'd like to contribute, click on the link in the show description to go to my supporter page. Once you're there, it's completely up to you how much you'd like to give. There's no minimum and no maximum and no ongoing charges. Enjoy this episode and thanks for listening to the Saturday Quiz.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hi there! Welcome once again to another episode of The Saturday Quiz. I'm your host, John Leary, and in a minute, I'm going to ask my two guests to answer the 10 general knowledge quiz questions from the quiz in The Saturday Paper. This week, I'm joined by two comedians who are on the road right now taking their shows around the country. One of them has been on the quiz quite a few times already, and the other is joining me for their very first time. Welcome to the show, Kirsty Wiebeck and Daniel Connell.
Hello.
G'day, Johnny. Thanks for having me on, mate.
My absolute pleasure. Lovely to meet you, Daniel.
You too.
And very nice to have you back, Kirsty.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You can't get rid of me.
I don't want to.
I email you every week and I'm like, what about this week, mate? Can I come on again?
Well, you're always welcome, absolutely. But yeah, I do have to give some other comedians a chance to come on and try and answer questions.
I've been asking for years and you keep saying, Kirsty's on this week, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no room for you. Yeah. But I finally got you on with Kirsty, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Now, Daniel, you've already opened your show, your comedy show, which is called Little Aussie Battler. You've already had a little season in Adelaide?
Yes, that's right. I did about 6 shows in the Perth Fringe and then about 7 in Adelaide in the last month or so. So, yes, the show's cooking along nicely.
Excellent. And Kirsty Wiebeck, your show, I'll be the judge of that.
Correct.
How's that going? You're just about to kick off.
I am. I'm about to kick off and also start my tour. I open next week in Canberra. So back to the hometown.
Wow.
For a couple hometown of nights.
Hero.
Yeah, hometown. Well, it's like that. They you know, they're like a country town out there, so they really get around you. So I'm really stoked about opening up there, and then the following week will be Melbourne, and it'll be all systems go.
I think we're all on.
Yeah, I think we're doing 180 or so shows in the 23 days or whatever it is.
Holy moly!
I'm already parched in anticipation.
And Daniel, you're also taking your show to Canberra, which is kind of a homecoming a little bit for you as well.
Yeah, a little bit. I've got a little bit of family there, a few old arch nemesis there. Kirsty will be there, so there's another arch nemesis that'll be there.
I'm going to fight him out the back of the theatre.
I'm not Canberra royalty like Kirsty is. Like, I don't get the limo to pick me up from the airport and all that sort of stuff.
Sure. I think that's probably reflected in the titles of your show as well. Yeah. I mean, you're the little Aussie battler and Kirsty's the judge.
I've made him the little Aussie battler just by spreading vicious rumours about him everywhere I go.
Excellent. Well, on this podcast, as you might remember, Kirsty, and I don't know if you're aware at all, Daniel, but I ask my guests if they have a favourite piece of trivia. Do you have a favourite piece of trivia?
You know what? I've got a fresh one that I only found out in the last couple of days because...
Fantastic.
St Patrick's Day is coming up.
Indeed.
And the national colour of Ireland, it stumped me. I saw it it's a bit of a bit of trivia. What would you think? You would think it is the first thing that comes to everybody's minds.
Green,
obviously.
It's
exactly.
Green.
Yeah,
would you? It's obviously green.
Yeah, it's blue. Would you believe?
What? What do you mean? The national colour of Ireland
I know.
Is blue.
It doesn't make It's not right.
Where is this the national colour?
Well, look, I'm doing the Comics Lounge this week with Kirsty, and an Irish man is the host, and he told me that.
He's having a lend.
He lives in Dublin, so I'm hoping he hasn't just sold me right up the river there with that.
That can't be true at all. I think,
and
yes,
the image, like the country's image, the shamrock isn't their thing either. It's the harp is the Irish.
Oh well,
the
yeah,
symbol, that, the symbol,
sure.
Which I, yeah. Again, I was, that threw me off as well. So there you go.
Well, if we find out that he's having you on, Dan, we can fight him in the car park tonight.
Good plan. What about you, Kirsty Wayback? Do you have a favourite piece of trivia?
Look, this is so funny, Johnny. I don't know if you remember, but last time I was on, I had a breakdown because I didn't have a piece of trivia and I couldn't remember what the thing you always ask on the quiz is. And this morning I was setting up my computer and I was like, what's that thing Johnny always asks?
He always asks for something.
And then I couldn't remember it. And then when you asked it, then I was like, oh no.
Oh, that's it. It's happening again. Thing I couldn't remember. Oh, that's funny.
Okay, well, I don't know if it's a bit of trivia, but it's something I learned recently that I've been obsessing over. Remember a couple of weeks ago in the news, there was that stingray that they thought had made love to a shark?
I might have missed that, but
so what,
keep going.
What happened is this stingray was pregnant and it had never had, I'm pretty sure it had never had other stingrays in the tank with it. But
yes, right.
It certainly
hadn't
had.
The virgin birth,
yeah,
right?
Mm. Yeah, and so then there was speculation for a good 24 hours, which I ate up, that maybe it was like a shark ray. And like the baby was going to be a shark ray, and I was on the edge of my seat. I didn't sleep, like,
wow.
As the news unfolded. Yeah, basically it turned out that they think it was one of those cases of the stingray, like, impregnating itself.
Yeah, right, and self. What is that called?
There is a word for it that I have been...
It's something Genesis. It's that's going to bug me.
It is Genesis.
Whatever, solo...
Yeah, just doing it on your own. Like
doing it on your own, yeah.
Sisters doing it for themselves. And so I think... Okay, so I didn't know that stingrays could do that. Like, I know there's other animals that can do that, but I had no idea stingrays can do that. And the fact that it wasn't their go-to makes me think that it's not particularly common. Like, the fact that people were like, I think it's rooted a shark... Rather than
it's done it itself.
But to be honest, I was a bit disappointed that it wasn't a bit of a love match between a shark and a stingray, because that would be cool.
Cool, terrifying.
Terrifying, yeah. Absolutely terrifying.
The shark head, like the teeth, but then the stinging tail with the barb as well.
Yeah and like the big flat body.
Oh,
yeah.
Be,
you know, pretty impressive. Yeah. Big, giant mouth.
So you're absolutely doomed. Like, there's no escape.
That's funny. Wow. Well, that. Thank you. That is a great bit of information, or, you know, a bit of trivia. I'm going to find out what that word is.
Yeah, please do, because it's going to wind me up as well. I wanted to say homogenesis, but I reckon I've made that up.
Parthenogenesis. That's what it is.
Oh, you know what? I was going to say pathogenesis as well. So what is it?
Oh, you were close.
Parthenogenesis.
Yeah, parthenogenesis.
Okay.
Is what it's called.
Okay.
It's a natural form of asexual reproduction in which growth and development of an embryo occur directly from an egg without need for fertilisation.
So parthenogenesis, is it?
Yeah.
I was going to say self-rooting, so I'm way off.
I mean, you're close.
I'll probably be saying self-rooting moving forward because it'll be easier for me to remember.
That's what... Oh, yeah. Okay, so here we go. Among vertebrates... Because, see, I can understand that it happened with, like, little things.
Yeah.
You know, insects and snails.
Yeah, snails. And I agree with you. I think it's a size thing.
Yeah, but it does happen with vertebrates. So lizards, snakes, birds.
Wow.
And sharks.
There you go.
With fish, amphibians and reptiles exhibiting various forms of, gynogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
And hybridogenesis.
Right, or self-rooting, which is an all-encapsulating term.
An incomplete form of... It's self-rooting. It's under the umbrella of self-rooting. Is the, wow, that's cool. Thank you, Kirsty Wayback. I love that one.
Pleasure.
All right, let's crack into the actual quiz. So there's no questions on parthenogenesis, I'm sorry to say. But question number one, we're starting with the sports question. We don't often start with a sports question, but this one we are. Question number one. Round one of the 2024 NRL season kicked off in which American city?
Come on, Kirsty, you should know that.
Oh, I mean, I was at the game, so it's I'm baffled as to why I can't remember.
You're a big NRL fan, aren't you, Kirsty?
Yeah, a player actually. Just I just came in actually from kicking around with the crew.
Well, from Canberra, you must know the Canberra Raiders.
Oh, big time. And my dad is a massive NRL guy. So not a Raiders supporter, I'm afraid.
Oh, who does he support?
He's a Panthers boy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He grew up in Penrith. So
couple of years?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah. So, grew up watching NRL, sadly for me. But this question.
You don't know when the first two games.
No, I think it's a jet lag from coming back from the games, actually. So,
do you know, Daniel? Or are you
I
just,
do,
you're
yeah,
just
yeah.
holding back?
Oh, here we go.
I'm big fan, yeah.
Are you? Are you a big NRL fan?
Yeah, I watched both games as well. I was in Adelaide.
Okay, not in this city.
No, he didn't come with me. No, he was at Adelaide.
So you can answer it, Daniel. Where were they played?
It was in Las Vegas.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah,
now
do
I remember
that.
We all went to the casino after.
Yeah, how'd you go?
No good. No good.
No, the house always.
I think that's why I blocked it out.
Yeah, probably. So yeah, they were the first two games of the NRL season were played in Vegas. Do you remember what which teams played, Daniel?
Yeah, it was Manly versus South Sydney, and then it was Brisbane versus Sydney Roosters. Yeah,
very good. Do you remember the scoreline? You're doing very well.
First game was like 34-24 or 36-24, something like that.
36-24, yeah, you're right.
And the second one, what's a trickier one? Maybe like 20.
Not as high. Yeah, 20?
24-10 or 24-12 or something like that.
No, just 20 to 10,
yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Who's your team?
West Tigers, I support.
Oh,
so.
Mate, me too.
Oh, do you?
Wow. I mean, it's like shocking.
It's been some.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of wooden
spoons. Tough couple of years.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The only way's up. As they say.
That's true.
I'll just head off, shall I?
Yeah, we're going to talk footy.
Getting in the way of this reunion.
All right, well, very well done. You got question one, no trouble at all. Question number two, in the insect world, what is a wriggler?
This definitely has something to do with self-rooting.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wonder if this insect is a self-rooter or possibly a self-rooter.
I mean, it sounds like a worm.
It does sound like a worm.
But then is that throwing us off the scent?
Because worms aren't insects.
What do you mean? Oh, no.
So this is definitely an insect, but it's the name of one of the life stages of this insect.
Ah.
Right? The life cycle of this insect consists of four stages.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can you guess what they might be?
Egg.
Yep.
Wriggler.
well, yes. Yeah. You're right. Egg. Wriggler.
Larvae.
That is one of the life stages.
Or something else.
And actually, that's the one that we're after. Larva.
Larva's a wriggler.
Yeah.
What?
Wriggler is the name that we give to the larva stage of this particular insect. Can you guess what it might be?
A fly.
Oh, they do fly, but it's not a fly.
A moth.
Not a moth, no.
A wasp.
Not a wasp either. I'll give you
10 more
another
guesses.
Clue. So I'll give you 10 more guesses. So the stages are egg, larva, pupa, and adult.
Mm-hmm.
And the first three, egg, larva, and pupa, are spent mostly in the water.
Oh.
Mosquito.
Mosquito is the right answer. Very well done.
Wow.
So a mosquito larva is called a wriggler because
They're yucky.
They wriggle. Yeah, because they're yucky. They breathe. They're in the water, but they breathe air through a siphon in their abdomen, and they swim either by propelling itself with its mouth brushes, which sounds gross, or by jerkily wriggling its body.
Wow.
Do you know what the pupa is called? You won't, but no. I mean, maybe you will. So the larva is called a wriggler and the pupa is called a tumbler. Isn't that cute?
Oh, that's yeah. Great.
I had a little ice cream bucket when I was a kid, as we all probably
lucky
did.
Lucky you.
And I had in it what I thought was tadpoles, frog babies, and I had leaves in there and I had it all set up. And after a few days, my dad looked in and goes, mate, that's a mosquito. Like, what are you doing? You got the mosquito baby pet.
You're breeding mosquitoes in the house.
In your dank water.
Every parent's dream. Yeah.
So they were wrigglers.
That's hilarious. Gone out to catch the tadpoles
or they
arrived?
They were in the bird bath out the back and I scooped them into the bucket. And I thought I'll bring these out, these little tadpoles. And then, yeah, they were wrigglers.
That is hilarious.
That's great. That's
very funny. All right, question number three. In which decade did singer-songwriter Prince change his name to an unpronounceable symbol? Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. It would have to be...
The 90s.
Oh, I was a kid. It might be the late 80s, though. I'm going to say 80s.
Daniel's going to say 80s, and what are you going to say, Kirsty?
1988, I'm going to say.
I'm with Daniel. It's late 80s, early 90s. I reckon Daniel's probably bang on, but there's no sense in us both going the 80s. So I'm going to say the 90s. And even though this isn't technically scored, I'm going to take a half point if Daniel's right.
No, you take the full point, Kirsty, because you're correct.
Oh,
it was the 90s.
Sucked in, Daniel.
Yes.
What? 1990 was it or not?
I think it was actually 93. I'm surprised I don't have that.
That's pretty deep in.
Down in front of me.
That's 5 years after what you thought, Daniel.
But yeah. He kept it up. Do you know when he stopped being known as, you know, the artist formerly known as Prince?
2010.
Not quite that long. But it was the year 2000.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Rebranded.
And do you know why he did it? Why he changed his name to that unpronounceable symbol?
No.
It was in response to a legal battle between him, Prince, and Warner Brothers over the artistic and financial control of his musical output.
You know.
He believed that Warner Brothers was intent on limiting his artistic freedom by insisting he release albums sporadically. So he changed his name to an unpronounceable symbol to emancipate himself from his contract with Warner Brothers. He said that he had done it out of frustration because he felt his own name now belonged to the company.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Question number four. 18 carat gold is what percentage of pure gold?
Whoa, I feel like
either of you wear gold or buy gold?
I don't. I mean, I could afford to, but I don't.
Oh, no. I think I know.
Yes, do you know?
I think it's 75%. Is that wrong?
Oh, very well done.
Because 24 is
yes.
Pure.
Yeah. So, yeah, caratage is the measurement of purity of gold alloyed with other metals. 24 carat gold is pure gold with no other metals.
Yeah.
But yes, 18 carat gold contains 75% gold and 25% other metals.
Daniel knew that because he just bought a few gold bars after his smash success at Adelaide Fringe. He got straight off the plane and just bought some gold bullion. So
just got some bullion. Yeah,
I think I think you're getting gold bars mixed up with Mars bars. That's all I could afford.
That's the gold you want. All right, very well done. Question number five. The Road is a 2006 post-apocalyptic novel by which American writer? And there's a bonus point for naming the actors who play man and woman in the 2009 movie version. Do you know this novel?
I think I saw it.
Do you know this movie?
I haven't read the novel, but I think I saw the movie. 2009.
Correct.
Oh, it's going back a while. It's not, I'll guess it's not Stephen King.
Have a guess.
Stephen King, is it?
It is not Stephen King, no. Mm. I mean, we're talking about being prolific before, which Stephen King certainly is, but this author, much less prolific.
Oh, okay. That makes it harder.
He also wrote No Country for Old Men.
Oh.
This novel, The Road, won the Pulitzer Prize in 2007.
No, I've got... drawing a blank.
Gosh, all right. How am I going to get you this?
Can you give me a hint on who was in the... what the film is about? I think I'm getting it mixed up with a different film.
Oh, what were you thinking about?
I'm thinking about that film with that Viggo Mortensen and the kid. Is that the road?
This is the one. Oh, that's the one.
Yeah.
So you you've got the bonus or one of the bonus points. Viggo Mortensen is plays the man.
Man, yeah.
And the kid, which is not a bonus point, is that Australian actor Cody Smit McPhee, young actor.
Yeah.
And it was directed by an Australian, John Hillcoat.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But the woman, this actor was also in a film called, she won an Academy Award for her portrayal of the lead character in Monster.
Oh, is it Charlize?
It is. Charlize Theron. It plays the woman. And it's apparently kind of a bigger role in the film than it is book.
And they're not they meet along the way, don't they?
No, it's in flashback that she is the mother of the child. Sure, that the man is traveling through a kind of post-apocalyptic landscape. But that doesn't get us any closer to the author of the book.
Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah. Less prolific.
less prolific. He only wrote 12 novels, 2 plays and 5 screenplays. He died last year.
Oh, no. So he's significantly less prolific now.
He is significantly less prolific now after passing away, as we all are, really.
I think so.
CM are his initials.
TM.
C, like...
like Colin.
Exactly like Colin, but not Colin.
Daniel.
Like
Christopher. What? Yeah, like Christopher.
No, it's kind of a... it's like a Scottish Charles. Kind of Celtic name.
Oh, wow.
Cedric.
Constantine.
Cedric.
Connor. That's got to be close.
It is kind of close.
You're getting warm, Daniel.
This is going to be weird. This is going to sound weird, but the first part of his surname, which if we're talking Scottish and it starts with M,
okay.
Could be like a what?
McDonough.
Yeah, it could be a Mac something.
Oh, McGregor.
So the first part of the surname is the second part of the first name.
Cormac.
Oh, Cormac?
Cormac. Yeah.
Cormac McGregor.
Cormac McGregor.
You've never heard of this author.
Wait,
evidence.
Isn't he a wrestler?
No. not Conor McGregor.
A wrestler.
It is his name, you evidently don't know who it is Cormac McCarthy.
Oh.
Heard of that name?
I think so. I feel bad that I don't know that guy's name. He's obviously,
that's all right. He's dead. He's not going
to. He's done some great things. He did some great things.
He has.
I tend to go for authors that are a bit more prolific myself.
Yeah.
He just wasn't churning out.
Come back
out
to me when you've
bangers.
Written 15, 20 books.
Yeah, that's right. But as an apology to him, Daniel and I are going to read his whole back catalogue out loud to each other, actually. So.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, while you do that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You are listening to The Saturday Quiz. I'm joined today by Kirsty Wiebeck and Daniel Connell. And we are up to question number six. Which sneaker brand has a style named the Chuck Taylor All-Star?
Converse.
Yeah, nice, easy.
All right,
bang, straight out.
I'm going to leave it there, I reckon.
Yeah, you don't want to. You don't want me to ask any follow-up questions?
Go on.
Like, who was Chuck Taylor? Any idea?
He was a shoe designer.
he actually wasn't a shoe designer.
I'm guessing he would be. Skater. Is he? Some sort of extreme sports man.
No.
Oh, not extreme sports.
He was the author of No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, Chuck Taylor. Famous author. No, get this. So he was a semi-professional basketball player who joined the company Converse as a sales rep. Cool. And he suggested changes to the shoe that they had been making for basketball. But when did they make the first basketball shoe, the Converse? They were called like non-skids or something like that. When did they make them?
God, probably 60s.
Way earlier.
Wow.
It was a Thursday.
What? Well, not the 1800s. But it was 1917.
Wow.
Right? The first basketball shoe made by Converse was made
in... I didn't know they had shoes back then.
Exactly. He was working for them and they redesigned the shoe in 1922 and it's remained pretty much unchanged since then.
That's cool. Wow.
Isn't that nuts?
That's huge.
Isn't that crazy?
That is.
Yeah, and it wasn't... I mean, it was the most worn basketball shoe all the way up until the 70s when it started being overtaken by other shoe brands. Yeah. But yeah, that blew my mind that Chucks were made in the 20s.
Yeah. Nuts. Yeah, that is.
All right, question number seven. Bayer trademarked which name for its drug made from acetyl salicylic acid 125 years ago this month?
Bayer.
How are you with your... Yeah, do you know the pharma company, big pharma company, Bayer?
What's something that just would have stood the test of time, that they would have had that word? I won't attempt to try, but it's got that salad word in it.
Yeah.
125 years. Maybe...
Like
an aspirin?
Very well done.
Oh.
That's exactly the correct answer. Aspirin.
Awesome. I was trying to think what's been around forever, and that's... aspirin.
Well, it's kooky. Doing research on this one was pretty interesting because acetyl salicylic acid comes from salicylate, right? Mm. So there's some evidence that the bark of the willow tree and other salicylate-containing plants were used for pain relief in ancient times. So the Assyrians and the ancient Egyptians recorded that willow could be used to alleviate pain. Mm-hmm. And the Greek physicians Galen and Hippocrates referred to the use of salicylic tea to reduce fevers around 400 BC. But the Wikipedia entry for the history of aspirin, of the drug aspirin, gets pretty snippy about these possibly erroneous claims. With this quote, this is from the Wikipedia page for aspirin. Numerous authors have claimed that willow was used by the ancients as a painkiller, but there is no evidence that this is true. All such accounts date from after the discovery of the drug aspirin and are possibly based on a misunderstanding of the chemistry. It's passag, right?
Yeah.
But in any case, the drug was developed by the German company Bayer in the very late 19th century when the company was still primarily a dye firm, like they made dyes, right? But this aspirin was by far their biggest product and saw it become one of the largest pharmaceutical manufacturers in the world. And credit for synthesizing acetyl salicylic acid at Bayer is given to Felix Hoffmann, who 11 days later synthesized another drug for the company, diamorphine.
Whoa.
Which from 1898 through to 1910 was marketed under what name as a morphine substitute and cough suppressant? What name do you think they chose for that one?
Those early marketing things were quite simple and but like very crook as well, I reckon. So something like Yummy or something like that.
I mean, it's a very familiar name. It's a
Benadryl.
Kind of a it's a name that they are happy to separate themselves from the trademark of this name. They tried to hold on to the trademark of aspirin for as long as they could, but they didn't for various reasons. But two world wars coming out of Germany being part of the reason. But this one, they're happy to kind of pretend that they weren't responsible for.
Cocaine.
No, the other one.
Meth.
No,
heroin.
The other one. Heroin.
Heroin, right.
So they, Bayer, came up with the name heroin for their morphine replacement and cough suppressant.
Wow.
Isn't that kooky?
Yeah.
Yeah, got a bit of a tickle in the throat. Bit of heroin, please.
that'll fix you up. All right. Question number 8. What shape is an ellipse?
Oval.
Yeah, it is an oval. Very well done.
Sorry, Daniel, for I ruined your working
is
out.
Is geometry one of your areas of expertise, Kirsty?
Yeah, yeah. Anything maths.
No.
Not at all. Like, there's about 3 shapes that I know.
All right, question number 9. We're nearly at the end. How many emirates make up the United Arab Emirates?
That's a good one.
Are you familiar with this country?
Familiar with the country, and I reckon I've heard this in my lifetime at some point.
Yeah. Have either of you been to the UAE?
I haven't.
No.
No? Can you name me any of the Emirates that you are familiar with?
So I'm guessing Dubai.
Dubai is one of them, yes. Very well done. The other one that I think you might know is Abu Dhabi.
Of course, yes, yes. I'm going to say 8.
What about you, Kirsty? I'm going with half a dozen.
Oh, you're either side. It's 7.
Ah!
Yeah.
Whoa.
There are 7 Emirates that make up the United Arab Emirates. They are Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Ajman, Fajairah, Ras Al Khaimah, Sharjah, and Al Quwain.
Right.
My apologies to anybody that speaks Arabic for my pronunciation of those, or my mangled pronunciation of the names of those emirates.
So I would get that right, because I said 8. It was, and I'm pretty sure you round up your emirates when you're when you're in quizzes. You got to round. You got to go.
You round up. But you overshot.
Yeah. I think you err on the side of caution. Yeah. That's the one who...
And what did you say? You said half a dozen. And maybe what you actually meant was half a baker's dozen, which is 6.5.
That's literally what I meant.
Which you would round up to 7.
That's right. That's
I think you'll find there's currently an 8th Emirates being built as we speak. So technically...
We are to the final question. Here we go. Question number 10. The Bhagavad Gita is a revered scripture in which religion? Bit of a tricky one.
It's Sikh.
It's not Sikh, no. But you're in the right area of the planet.
Oh, okay.
This is a 700-verse scripture forming the chapters 23 to 40 of Book 6 of the Mahabharata, which is itself considered...
Hindu is the right
answer. Very well done.
Well done.
Do you know the Mahabharata?
I've heard of it before. It wasn't like a wild stab in the dark.
Yeah.
I knew the region it was from.
Yeah, exactly. So, it forms part of the kind of, I guess, holy book of Hinduism.
Interesting you say sorry, Kirsty, that you say that it wasn't a wild stab in the dark, where we're on Zoom here and I can see you. You turned your light off in your room, took a knife out, and you were flailing that knife around everywhere looking for the answer.
Incredibly wild stab in the dark.
That wasn't about the answer. That was a totally unrelated matter.
It does involve stabbing in the dark, the Bhagavad Gita, maybe a little bit. It's written...
What a segue.
Yeah, right? Do you like that? It was written as a dialogue between the warrior king Arjuna and his charioteer guide Krishna in the eighth avatar of the god Vishnu while on the battlefield in the immediate moments prior to the start of the battle that forms part of the story.
That is super cool.
Nice. Well done. I think you guys did extremely well at the quiz.
Oh yeah, that was super fun.
How'd you feel you went?
Kirsty, you go first. I think you went poorly, but that's my opinion.
Look, I'm going to chalk it up as a major triumph for me, I think.
Excellent. Good. And you, Daniel?
I think I started quite strong because you really threw me a lovely little juicy half volley with the sports question to start.
Yeah. Indeed.
Lost my track a little bit there with the the tumblers and whatnot. It was kind of like a worm for me. I was going up and down as the day, but I really enjoyed it. Thanks, man.
Well, Kirsty Wiebeck, Daniel Connell, your shows, Kirsty's show, I'll be the judge of that, and Daniel's show, Little Aussie Battler. My listeners can go to your websites to find tickets and venues and where you're playing and when, and they can buy tickets there as well?
Yes. Yep. There's all the links on the website.
Yeah. Absolutely. Would love to see you there.
It has been an absolute pleasure having you come and do the quiz. Thank you so much. I'll see you next week, Kirsty. And Daniel, you might have to wait
Cheers,
a little bit longer.
Yeah. Jeez. I'll see you in a couple of years, mate. Thanks, Johnny.
Folks. See you next time. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Saturday Quiz. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to my guests, Kirsty Wiebeck and Daniel Connell. We covered some of Kirsty's bit of trivia about parthenogenesis, but Daniel's trivia on the national colour of Ireland left me in disbelief. After a little bit of research, it seems that there might be quite a bit of truth to it. Although there is no official national colour of Ireland in its constitution, blue does have the longest historical association with the country. All the way back in the 13th century, the coat of arms of the King of Ireland was a golden harp on a blue background. Then, late in the 18th century, green became a symbol of Irish nationalism and republicanism. But when Ireland achieved political independence from the UK in 1922 with the creation of the Irish Free State, it was decided to revive the previous coat of arms to link the new independent Ireland with the last kingdom of Ireland, and that is the country's coat of arms to this day. So, in effect, blue could be considered the national colour. As always, the questions in this quiz were written by the superb Cindy MacDonald, and my thanks go to her. This episode was recorded on the land belonging to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to their elders past and present, and acknowledge their traditions of sharing knowledge and stories for millennia on this land. My name's John Leary, and I'll have more questions for you same time next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.